This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And good morning from the sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor, as we are joined now from her home in beautiful Prince Edward County. There's Charlie Dobbin. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Frankie. How are you?
Hey, okay. Thank you very much. Got a good-looking day out there.
I know. Hey. Boy, you know what I'm doing today.
A little gardening, I would say.
Just a little lawn repair. It's a big lawn, and there's some repair required still.
Well, that's good. We've got, I better give out the phone numbers here, although
sure.
at the moment we've got a full slate showing up. But if you're interested in asking a question of Charlie, who undoubtedly will help you out, here's the number in the Toronto area to call Charlie Dobbin, 416-360-0740, anywhere in the province, toll-free. 1-866-740-4740. A wee reminder that our mantra is call early, call often, one question per call. And if you are a first-time caller, please let Carlos, our operator, know. He'll let me know. And just before you get to the airwaves, there you go. You're going to get your garden wings.
There okay. you go.
All set up. Good.
Thank you. Well done. Well, you're sharp today.
Oh, right on the bit, I'll tell you.
So a couple of upcoming meetings that people have been telling me about. I've got two for this Tuesday, April 27th.
Okay.
One is the Hamilton and Burlington Rose Society. Mm-hmm. They have meetings by Zoom, of course, as is everybody doing these days. At 7 o'clock, they've got Anna Leggett, and her topic is Clematis, a perfect companion for roses. So to get onto that Zoom call, email HB Rose Society, that's one word, HB Rose Society at simpatico.ca. And also the Alliston Garden Club. Now they are in a mode of really trying to expand their club. So they've got a draw. If you join their club, it's only $15 for an entire year for individuals and $20 for a family membership. And they've got a $50 gift card at a local nursery for all new members that will be drawn. So totally worth checking them out. They've got a lot of meetings going on. One this Tuesday, speaker is Christine March. She's a master gardener. She's going to be talking about daylilies. So, yeah, it's a lot going on there. And you know what? I'm booked this week. I'm actually speaking to the Burlington Carp Group. So Carp is affiliated with us at Zoomer Media.
Yes.
On Thursday, I'm doing a Zoom event with Carp out of Burlington. My topic is gardening as we age. And then on Wednesday, the day before that, I'm speaking on behalf of a large condo corporation in downtown Toronto. And it's all in honor of Earth Week. Because remember, it's Earth Week. And they've booked me to share with the people who live in these condos gardening on their balconies and that sort of thing, penthouse places. Everybody's excited. They're all booking in for that. So, yeah, it's spring is definitely in the air.
You got it. Oh, lucky those folks having you to be the guest speaker. My gosh.
Yeah, thank you.
Maybe, you know, with the thoughts of garden clubs and so forth listening into the show, and you've got meetings that you've got coming up where you'd like others to know about, by all means, maybe give Charlie the heads up on that stuff by sending her a little email at c.dobbin, that's D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Whoop, and I see we've reached our limit here for our first segment, Charlie.
Oh, my.
Well, we have, as I indicated, a packed house on the phone lines, so we'll get to say hi to Bob and others coming up shortly here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, I think we're in for a busy show today. As a matter of fact, I know it. From Don Mills, let's welcome Bob to the line here. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Frank, and hi, Charlie. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, what's going on?
Well, it seems like Charlie and I and my wife were all doing the lawn today. And a few years ago, Charlie, we had a problem with crabgrass, and we called you up, and you said, put on corn gluten, and it will get rid of the crabgrass. It won't seed. And it's worked wonderfully. So this year, as per your advice, back then, when the forsythia came along, around April 1st, we put on the corn gluten. And today we're going to be wandering out on the lawn. Unfortunately, there seems to be some patches on our lawn that are less than ideal. So my question is, how long after applying corn gluten can you overseed?
Well, in order for those seeds to germinate, because as you know, that's the thing that corn gluten does, it inhibits seed germination. So it's going to be partially dependent on the amount of precipitation we've had, because you need to kind of neutralize that corn gluten. Generally, though, we say 5 to 6 weeks.
Wonderful.
So you put it on about 3 weeks ago. So what you should be doing now is top dressing. So that's that nice triple mix or lawn top dressing. After you've done a hard raking on the lawn, which I assume you did with a fan rake, now it's with a flat rake and some good fresh soil, filling in all those gaps, getting it as level as you can, and then you'll have to. What I'm actually doing is I'm doing just like you, the top dressing. I'm also using a starter fertilizer, and then I'm seeding sort of all at the same time. And I keep trying to do this just before it rains. So I'm doing my lawn in quadrants. And we don't have any rain really forecast here till about Wednesday, so I'm hoping I'll get a lot done between now and then.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you both for being there. You're doing a wonderful job keeping the gardening community together, and our lawns look fabulous.
That's great, Bob. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye for that.
Boy, we should pay you for that testimony.
I know. doing commercials for us.
Yeah. I'm looking at an email that was kind of left over from last week with a secondary question. This is for Alicia in Buffalo. She says, I have covered my gardenia bush and watered it when possible. When should I uncover it? Thanks so much for your help.
Okay, now she was writing this about 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
These emails have been kind of piling up. Hopefully, Alicia has uncovered her gardenia now because it has been warm. It's certainly been warmer in Buffalo than it has been here. I'm not sure where she overwintered the gardenia. I'm hoping that it was in at least an unheated, garage or shed, because it wouldn't have survived outside in any winter in Buffalo or Toronto. And then she asks about fertilizing it with muir acid. And yes, muir acid is a very classic sort of a fertilizer, and it is designed for acid-loving plants. So plants at like a low pH. So definitely, yes, follow the instructions. Assuming that plant is alive, get it fertilized. We are in spring. It is time to fertilize all our plants. Outdoors, indoors, everybody's bursting with growth, and now's the time to support that growth with the right fertilizer.
Good stuff. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines here and say hi to Judy calling in from Stratford. Good morning, Judy.
Used this morning.
Great, thank you.
Morning.
I'm having an issue here. I planted marigold seeds, and they were doing beautifully. I did a whole flat of them. They were nice and green. They were getting the heads on, so I was pinching them out so they'd spread. And all at once, they started turning kind of a white color, and they're kind of drying up. So I've transplanted them out of that dirt. I don't know if the dirt came from a greenhouse. What's the problem?
So the soil, it was a bagged soil, I assume.
Yeah, like I got it down at a greenhouse. It's what they use to grow their stuff.
When you say white, that makes me think of fungal issues. And that's the one thing that can happen, particularly with our seeds when we pack them in to a flat. Insufficient air circulation can lead to fungal problems.
They were sick.
Yeah, so transplanting them is a good idea, getting them separated into separate pots, get lots of sun on them, even turn a fan on them if you wish, just get that air circulating. Be very careful with your watering. So you say they're kind of drying up. Now hopefully you can save them. Obviously, you don't want to have them soaking wet. You want to water them thoroughly and then drain away any excess water that might be in the tray below and get, like I say, lots of sun. Some air circulation should solve your problem.
I've been spraying them with soap and water. Will that help?
No.
Oh.
Stop. Okay. Soap and water. Soap is really good for controlling insects, but not good for fungal. It actually supports fungal diseases, so don't spray soap and water.
I was doing it every other day. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So should I put them outside, like today when it's sunny?
Yeah, you could, but don't put them in right in the sun from inside.
No, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But sure, get them outside. They'll love that fresh air and that little bit of breeze, but put them in a sheltered spot, no direct sunlight, not right out in the extreme wind. But that is a process we call hardening off. That's introducing our little tender plants to the big bad world.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling, Judy. In order to leave a little bit of time here for a special guest we've got lined up, Ian Simpson, who's going to come by with Earth Day in mind, and some very interesting information about making a call when you dig.
Okay.
And you've sort of lined all this up, Charlie, so we'll better take a break here and then come back and give time to Carlos to conference in Ian Simpson, who will be by with all sorts of interesting stuff for us right here on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, we're going to ask Sandra in Etobicoke and Wilma in Stratford to hang on to those lines. We'll be to you very shortly. But first, Charlie, maybe you can introduce our special guest here.
I will for sure. Good morning. Is Ian Simpson on the line?
I am. Hi, Charlie. How's it going?
Excellent. This is Frank.
Hey,
Ian. Hi, Frank.
Nice to meet you, Ian.
Nice to meet you.
Ian is the Education, Marketing, and Compliance Director at On One Call. So, okay, what is On One Call, Ian?
Yes, so Ontario One Call. Ontario One Call is the place that everyone in Ontario needs to contact before they dig.
Mm-hmm.
It's vitally important. We are a law as well. And basically, people reach out to Ontario One Call in order to make sure that when you dig, you are safe. By reaching out to us, right, people give us a bit of information about the dig that they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that through our online if you want, or you can call us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we take those details, and then we notify all of the utilities and underground infrastructure owners in the area that could be at risk from your dig. And then they send representatives out to show you where it's safe to dig by putting marks on the ground where the infrastructure is and sending you an email with paperwork telling you what those lines actually mean.
Wow, pretty darned important stuff there. Well, what's the phone number that folks could call?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, which is OntarioOneCall.ca, and request to locate there. Yeah. Or the phone number, which we are available 24 hours a day, every day of the year, is 1-800-400-2255.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. And Ian and I were chatting yesterday, and he brought up some really good points, like things I hadn't even thought of. Like, say you rent a house. And, you know, your family says, you know, this fence needs some repair. Let's put in a fire pit or let's take a swimming pool, like whatever. Everybody has to call, whether it's front yard, backyard, side yard. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much anytime you're planning to dig. I mean, if you're trying to put in some new patio stones, if you are hiring a contractor to repave your driveway, that contractor needs to call Ontario One Call. Just to make sure everyone's safe. You want to protect your family. You want to protect your household. You want to protect yourself.
Right.
There are dangerous hazards under the ground, and unfortunately, there are fatalities that happen or major injuries.
Ian, can you give us a few examples of what could happen, what kind of dangerous situations occur when people don't call and they just go ahead and dig? What sort of things happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, the most dangerous ones that come top of mind are gas lines. If you hit a gas line, I mean, you know, you're going to have to call 911. You're going to have to evacuate the area. You know, it's an emergency situation. Electricity lines as well, especially if they're high voltage, people get electrocuted. Mm-hmm. But there are a whole series of things under the ground that you just don't want to hit, including telecommunication lines, water, sewer. Yeah.
Now, for making that one call to 1-800-400-2255, how long would it be before people could safely get notified that, yeah, go ahead and dig? Is there a time limit here? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there are digs that are going to happen with some people where you're not going to need utilities to come out to put the lines down. And then they'll send you an email saying you're all clear to dig, right? So that's one, and that could happen very fast. But what we do in Ontario is we notify the utilities, and they have 5 business days in order to get out there to try their hardest, right, all reasonable efforts to mark the grounds for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, as everyone is at home and doing lots of outdoor planning and trying to figure out what kind of projects they want to do, we are receiving some of the highest volumes we've ever received at Ontario One Call. Charlie and I were talking about this yesterday. It's like people want to do their projects. Ontario One Call, people are starting to be aware of us, which is great because we've been a law for almost a decade now. Mm-hmm. And they're reaching out in order to get locates so they can dig safe. And it's coming in droves right now, which is great because we need people to be safe. But we're just asking people to be patient. If for whatever reason it takes an extra day for the gas company to show up, just be patient and just look for your emails because the paperwork comes in through the email.
Boy, that's a great service. It really is.
And it's interesting, too, I find that, you know, the number of calls has as much as doubled between this spring and 2 springs ago. So we've got a lot of homeowners doing a lot of digging and a lot of staycationing. So it's an amazing service. And you know what else? It's completely free. It doesn't cost us a penny. And it just keeps everybody safe.
Okay. Could you give that website again? I didn't mark it down, unfortunately. But
yeah, not a problem. It's OntarioOneCall.ca.
Oh, just the way it sounds. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, if you go on Google and you write in, you know, locates or Ontario One or Ontario One Call, you will find us. We are out there and we're going to help you through the process. So go to our website, click on request a locate. You can put in your dig information any time of the day you want, or you can call our 800 number as well. We're just telling everyone that we are receiving higher volume calls than we've had ever in our history. And we are open 24 hours a day. So you don't have to do it first thing in the morning. If you are calling us, right, we're not 9 to 5. We're always available.
So wow. Ontario One Call.
Well.
It's free, it's easy, and it's the law.
And it's important.
You got it.
But, you know, I will just share my experience with this because when I moved to my current home, I'm living in some brand new home and a brand new street with, you know, everything's brand new. And when I tried to set up the locates to find out where the gas lines and the electrical and all that is, it was very hard to do because my house didn't show up on Google satellite maps. So it's very hard to identify where my house is and where my property is. And it did become a number of phone calls, but the people I spoke with on the phone were lovely and very, very helpful. So that's
great to hear. Yeah, that's great to hear. We're here to help. You know, the thing is that we just want everyone in the province to be safe. Mm-hmm. We just don't want any disasters.
Yeah. So plan ahead. Don't wait till the day you want to get digging. Plan ahead. Make the call at least a week before you want to start digging, I would say.
Yeah, I think a week is great. So if you're looking out there, you're saying, you know what, next week or in the next 2 weeks, I want to do this project, just reach out to Ontario One Call at OntarioOneCall.ca.
Yeah, now if I'm just going to say plant, I guess even just planting a tree, I should call, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, anything, yeah.
Anything, really. I mean, you know, except for maybe raised flower beds and things like that, right? Yeah. Because it's not underground. It's when you're disturbing the ground, when you're on the ground level. But trees, bushes, if you have to repair a fence post, like take it out and put a new one in, you want to know. Just because you put a fence post in there before doesn't mean that you nearly missed something. So you want to know what's there.
Gee whiz, you know, I'm so glad that we've got you on the air today, because Shirley and I have planned to put in an above-ground pool, but we need to flatten out the area where this 24-diameter pool is going to go. And so now I'm going to call Ontario One Call to have that checked out. My gosh.
Yeah.
And it's great. So just so you know, I mean, we notify all the public utilities, right? So you might actually have infrastructure that you own in your backyard as well. So all the public utilities will let you know where it's safe to dig. And then if you own things, like say you have in the past, or you bought a house where there's lines going to a garage with a light, or you have like propane running to a barbecue, those are your lines. So you own them. So you need to know where those are as well. And if you don't know, there are other services out there that can help you locate those. So just always be safe.
Ian, thank you so much for guesting with us on the show. It's been really fascinating and
Good stuff. Very helpful. Yeah. Thanks, Ian. Happy Earth Week to you.
Yeah, happy Earth Week to you. And if anyone has any questions at all, just reach out to Ontario One Call. And Charlie, if you ever want to reach back out to me, you're more than welcome.
All righty. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, call before you dig.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. and we're back to the phone lines here, Charlie. Bless her heart for hanging in. Sandra in Etobicoke, about to say good morning to you, Charlie. Hiya, Sandra.
Morning, Charlie and Frank. What a beautiful morning.
It sure is.
Charlie, last year for the first time, I had red elder beetles. And they were just on one plant. I have a small miniature rose, and behind it there is prairie mallow, and these beetles were all over the prairie mallow. They were just in this one bed. Is there any way I can control them and stop them from coming back?
Not that I know of. They're very seasonal. They're very, they're probably mating. Like, they come together as a group. Either they've just woken up, or they're just going to bed, or they're mating. Like, they don't generally hang out in herds like that. And I'm just trying to think, were they elder, beetles, or, what we're referred to as box elder bugs.
Box elder, yes. They were red with a very distinctive black marking on them. Mm-hmm. Some of them were tiny, tiny, and there were obviously bigger ones.
Yeah.
And they were just covered, all the stems of this prairie mallow. I didn't know if it was going to harm it.
No, and the thing is, they certainly don't hurt you. They don't bite people. Mm-hmm. Unless they're threatened, they're not going to do anything. So, you know, the problem is, if you try squishing them, I'm pretty sure these are the ones, they stink. Carpet beetles, these kind of inside the house.
I used Safer's insecticidal soap on them, and that seemed to kill them, but they just kept coming back and back and back.
So you just found them like a little disturbing. Well, I mean, I'd be more worried if they were inside the house, but you're right. The soap will work as long as you coat their little bodies with the soap.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that they flew away when you started spraying them, though, didn't they? And then I guess they just came back. There was something about that mallow that they liked.
I guess they just seemed to stay on it. No, they didn't seem to fly away when I sprayed them.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. So, I mean, they're called box elder bugs because they feed on the juice of ungerminated maple seeds. So, you know how the little helicopters come down out of the maple trees and they land on the ground? Box elder bugs drink the juice that's in those seeds, usually off the ground. And so there was something about that mallow that was very attractive to them. There must have been something they were eating, licking.
Right, because I have a very large maple tree at the front of the property.
Oh, yeah.
But this is at the back, and they're certainly Okay, so they're not going to harm the plant. It looks like it's starting to grow again.
Yeah, they're not going to harm the plant. They're certainly not going to harm you, so I wouldn't be overly concerned. I think that sometimes, like I say, they do become an infestation inside the house. But outside, I wouldn't worry about them at all. Inside, you want to vacuum them up or get rid of them that way. You don't want to squish them. They smell really bad. They're called stink bugs.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for contacting us here at The Garden Show, Zoomer Radio. I have a note here. Now, this is kind of one of those situations where it's an email that's been held over for at least a couple of weeks, but the fact that Lucia De Favere is up in Sudbury might have a bearing on your answer here. Second question that she proffered up, is there a preferred way to prepare soil for wildflower planting? She was hoping to plant them along a driveway, and currently there's grass growing in that area. So what help can you be there, Charlie?
So, I mean, you're right. Sudbury is probably experiencing the weather we were experiencing about 2 or 3 weeks ago or something like that. So that they're always a little bit behind us. So that this is still a timely question for the Sudbury area. So grass growing along the driveway, but she wants to turn it into a wildflower planting. I'll tell you right now, first you got to kill the grass. So there's several ways to do that. One is to suffocate the grass with tarpaulins for 4 to 6 weeks. Or what I've done to also kill grass is cut it as short as you can, lay newspaper on top of that short cut grass, you know, a couple layers of newspaper, then water the newspaper, and then pile some triple mix, manure, compost, leaves, anything you want on top of the newspaper, and that will hold the newspaper down, and of course you have to seal the edges to make sure that the grass beneath dies down. Once the grass is dead, then we prepare a seed bed. And a seed bed for wildflowers is pretty similar to any seed bed, just like you would do, well, just like Bob and I are going to be doing, which is the lawn repair. So that's that leveling of the fresh soil, breaking up the big chunks, making it a fine layer of soil that's nice and level and raked smooth, and then distributing your seed on the surface of the soil, like you're, you know, feeding the chickens, and then, of course, reading the package carefully. Is this seed that needs to be left on the surface, or is this seed that needs to be lightly covered? And you'll follow those directions, and then you'll preferably do this before rain, and then, of course, the rain will come and moisten the soil and get those seeds growing, and there you are. But make sure that the soil is good quality. It's, you know, fairly fertile. It's got lots of organic matter in it, and that will be very, very supportive of the seeds growing and growing for many years so that you don't have to worry about doing a lot of top dressing in the future.
Okay. All right? You know, after working with you for so many years now, Charlie, I get to kind of, by intuition, know that you're dying to fill your coffee cup. And I think that might be the case. So why don't I give you a little break here, let you run to the kitchen, get that cup filled up. Meanwhile, a word to Wilma in Stratford and a first-time caller, Brian from Dundas. Hang tight. We'll be coming back to you very shortly. This is The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, we're going to hop along to Holstein, Ontario. There's Wilma on the line. Good morning, Wilma.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I thought I was going to move to Stratford, but I found the things. But I'm staying in Holstein.
Good for you.
I have an issue with a back section of our lawn. We had steps off the patio that were built out of railroad ties, and, of course, the creosote. A couple years ago, my husband decided we don't use those steps really anyway, so he took them out, and now we are trying to get lawn established. Is there an issue with that ground because of the creosote ties?
Are you having trouble growing grass there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it was, I'm not sure whether it was last spring or last fall that he put the grass seed in. And it's not, and he has topped it up again this year. just because it wasn't doing what he wanted it to do. So we are in a wait mode again now, but I wondered if there was going to be a real issue with the soil.
Well, did you have any idea when those stairs would have gone in, been installed?
Oh, it's at least 20 years because we have been here now almost 17. And I'm assuming it was in, well, I know it was in before we came here.
Right.
So it's been there a while.
Right. Gosh, I was going to say that the creosote, like timbers, they were literally old railroad ties is what this all started.
Yes, I'm sure they were. Yeah.
And then, of course, creosote kind of went out, it stopped being used, particularly by homeowners. So I'm just trying to take a look here, because basically what you want to do is you want to neutralize the creosote. And, of course, water is the first thing that comes to mind. Let's see what it's just neutralizing creosote. Bowl full of distilled white vinegar, center of the room. No, that's smell. Leave the bowl. Creosote smell. Stages. Remove. Yeah, see, I mean, this is just a quick search here on the web. It's all about, you know, creosote getting onto some furniture or something. I would, I mean, best case, you would actually excavate some of the soil away and put it somewhere else out on the property. Because, you know, it's the concentration of the creosote. Creosote in very, very tiny quantities would not be a big issue. And it is just making it, it was used because it was an antifungal chemical to keep the wood from rotting or from being infested with insects. Mm-hmm. So, it also, because of those properties, made it hard for plants to grow as well, weeds, et cetera. So what can you do? Excavation would be the best. Water would be a backup, and number three would be probably what your husband has done, which is to add more soil, fresh soil, mix it up as much as you can. Use a starter fertilizer with the seeds, like do everything in your power to really tender, loving care those grass seeds. Coddle them much more than you would normally, because grass is pretty tough. And you might want to really look for some tougher grass seeds, like some of the fescues are much tougher grasses than, say, the Kentucky bluegrass seeds. So look for maybe a blend that's really, like I say, tougher than the average, and it might be more able to thrive in that somewhat of a poisoned soil, but it will neutralize over time. It's just going to take time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, I guess we just hope and wait.
Yeah, and like I said, do hover a bit over those seeds. Do whatever you can to get them growing, and once they get growing, they'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very
everybody,
much.
Hi to everybody there in Holstein, Ontario.
Yeah. Thank you.
Alrighty. Thank you. I have really a neat note from Heather Sinopoli, who you'll recognize that name from the Riverdale Hort Society, right?
Mm-hmm.
First, she has a comment and then a little bit of a question. But the comment, she says, we've had Paul Oliver come to educate us about birding several times at the Riverdale Hort Society. Always informative and entertaining. And I'd like to add one thing about bird calls. I recently read a book set in Australia on my tablet. A bird was mentioned that I'd never heard of, and by highlighting the name, I was able to see a photo of the whip bird, and then by clicking on the picture, I heard this bird's distinctive call. Who knew you could do that? I live in Toronto and download most of my books from the Toronto Public Library. Great service, especially during the pandemic.
Yeah,
so thanks for that info, Heather. Going to have to check that up, too. But Heather writes, my question. Please share some ideas for record keeping in the garden for the lazy and forgetful gardener, i.e., what's where? How old is it? What's the proper name? Any special needs? And maybe our listeners might be able to help out along with any advice you have to offer, Charlie.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think this is a really good sort of question to put out to our listeners.
Yep.
Is what do you do to keep records in your garden? I know journals are very popular, garden journals, and you'll remember in December every year, we talk about the Toronto Garden Source, Gardener's Journal that's put out by, now it's put out by the Battersby sisters with the help of Margaret Bennett Alder. It's called the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardener's Journal. So that's a physical book that's designed for filling in the blanks, and that's
can be helpful if that's the way you like to keep track of things. I use my phone quite a bit now, because the cool thing about your phone is you take pictures and you don't have to write down the dates or anything, because the date is automatically kept. And then you can name the picture. You can give the actual name of the plant while you're right away thinking about it, while you're taking that picture. I also save tags, you know, those original tags that come with plants. Uh-huh. I'll mount them, again, into a binder, into a book. I've been known to make lists on my computer, you know, front yard inventory, backyard inventory. But, of course, those, when we move plants around, then you have to maintain your inventory, or something dies or you add something. So it's always a bit onerous keeping the inventory up to date. But it's a really good question, Heather, and there is no question. We are forgetful. You know, the older we get, the more forgetful we are. So any ideas that anybody else has to share what they do to stay on top of what's where in their garden and what it's called, give us a call. We'd be certainly happy to hear about anybody else's suggestions. So thanks a lot, Heather.
Yep, good stuff. Brian from Dundas is on the line. He's a first-time caller. I'm real anxious to get to the bell to give him a ring here. but we have to take a break right at this moment on The Garden Show. So Charlie Dobbin will be offering up advice to Brian momentarily here on Zoomer Radio.
This is Zoomer Radio Toronto.
CFZM FM and CFZM AM, owned and operated by MZ Media Incorporated.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie Franklin, David Proctor, reaching for the old bell. Here we go. First-time caller Brian on the line from Dundas. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for the bell.
<You're welcome. laughs>
Exactly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My question, Charlie, is about grubs.
Uh-huh.
I have a very healthy lawn, like most of us do this time of year with the rain and the sun and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But in the past couple of years, I've had grubs in my mm-hmm. front yard, which eventually turn into beetles, which eventually fly into my backyard and eat the flowers. I bought some Grub Be Gone last year, late in the season, mm-hmm. and I read the package, and it says that I should apply it when I see evidence that grubs are there, which means that they've started to eat my lawn. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if there's a preemptive measure I could take, or if there's a way I could use this product before I see them eat my lawn, so I don't have to see the brown patches.
Yeah. So the trick with because Grub Be Gone is a new idea. I'm just wondering what's in it. Grub killer controls. I'm not sure what its active ingredient is. Biological. It's a biological insecticide. So, this has got nematodes in it. Okay, so the way grubs work, they're really very ugly when they're in a grub stage. They're white, they have a little brown head, they always lie so that they're shaped like the letter C, and they are very hungry. They chew roots. They're found below the ground. They'll chew roots of grass, roots of plants in the garden. They'll happily chew anything that they're close to. And then they get bigger and bigger and bigger until they eventually pupate, so they become a little cocoon. And then you're absolutely right. They emerge out of the ground as full-grown beetles, and then they fly typically up into the trees and start chewing on the trees, have some wild parties, and then lay a bunch of eggs, and the whole process starts again. At this time of year, you won't see any adult beetles. You will start seeing the adults usually around June. It might be May, late May, June, July. And those are the things like the June beetles and the Japanese beetles, European chafers. They're all very hungry beetles that can do a lot of damage when they're flying around. The grubs, for all of them, are found under the ground. And you won't be able to kill them at this time of year. Because if there's any grubs in your soil right now, in your lawn, they're grubs that hatched out last summer. And they spent the winter down deep below the frost line. They're pretty clever. They know when winter's coming, and they go down below ground, spend the winter down literally several feet below surface. Once it starts to warm up, they move their way back up closer to the surface and start eating again. And by this time, they're fairly big, and their skin is quite tough.
with all that up and down through the soil movement, there's no insecticide that's going to kill a grub at this time. So don't waste your money or your insecticides now. I think the main thing you want to do is you just want to do everything in your power. Like you said, your lawn looks great. So maintain your lawn as a great lawn and watch it. You'll start to see grub damage usually when after the adults have emerged, the eggs have laid, and then the eggs have hatched. By that time, it's August. That's when we start to usually see grub damage, and that's when you want to jump on doing whatever you have in your garage to control them. So this Grub Be Gone certainly is probably worth trying. I've never used it myself, but I have certainly used the nematodes, and Frank's familiar with the
yes.
nematode application in August when we start to see little yellow patches that get bigger and bigger over days. It looks like a dog peed, and then, you know, loony size, and then before you know it, that yellow patch is expanding, and so you know you've got grubs when you see that. So I'm not a big fan of being preemptive and just putting insecticides down on principle. I'm much more in favor of keeping being very observant, visiting your garden, watching your lawn, and then responding when you start to see an issue.
And you think that would probably be in around August?
It is usually, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That answers my question. So I was wondering if I should do anything now. Obviously, the answer is no.
Yeah.
So I wait until later into the summer and be very observant.
Exactly.
Good for you, Brian.
Stay on top of it. And, yeah, I mean, some people might find raccoons or skunks peeling their lawn up right now.
Yes.
And that happens, and they know they've got grubs when that happens. Now, could you use this grub killer now? I'm not sure. I'd have to do a little more reading about it. But like I said, they're pretty tough insects right now. They're pretty hard to kill. And I just let the animals, the starlings, do a great job, not only aerating your lawn, but eating the grubs at this time of year.
Okay, there
Good
we go.
Good luck with that. Thanks,
yeah.
Brian.
Thank you, Brian. And I don't know whether we have time enough to get one more call in here, depending how lengthy the question and the answer would be. But Gail is on the line from Kawartha Lake, so let's see if we can fit this in. Otherwise, we'll get her to call next week. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Charlie and Frank. A quick question. I have geranium cuttings growing in little those little red beer cups, and they have all kinds of blossoms. Should I allow those blossoms to stay, or should I be removing them?
Do you have roots on those geranium cuttings yet?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. You know what? I would just pot them up. Get them into some soil, or you want to leave them in water before you take them outside?
Set them till May 24th.
Right. So the rule book says you should always take the flowers off when doing any transplanting of flowering plants. But then your heart says, why would I take flowers off? They're gorgeous, and obviously they're healthy, and they've got roots. I would personally leave them.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, enjoy yourself up there in the Kawartha Lakes, beautiful area of
the
province, I'll tell you.
Lucky to live there.
Cottage
hey, Frank,
country,
did I tell you what? We have a very special guest coming next week. Or
yeah, what's
joining
going
on?
Us.
Yeah. Our fearless leader, Moses Neimer, is going to be with us next week, telling us about his pet project.
This is absolutely fascinating. Do you want to just kind of explain just a wee tad about what he's going to talk about?
Well, Moses will tell us for sure next week when he gets on in the air. But Moses somehow stumbled over a gentleman named Sam Van Aken, he's kind of an artist and a horticulturalist. He works at a Syracuse, and he's a very talented grafter. He's very good at grafting different pieces of plants onto other plants. So for him, it all kind of started as a surprise to create a tree that had 40 different grafts on it, so 40 different fruits, because it's all about fruit trees. And they're stone fruits, so it's plums and apricots and cherries and peaches and that sort of thing. So Moses just fell in love with this idea, and he got Sam to come to Toronto from Syracuse back 3 years ago, and they started the process of creating a tree of 40 fruit in High Park, which is, frankly, in Moses' backyard.
And you know what? We're going to have to hold that story for the conclusion next week, okay? Moses will be on the line with us here on The Garden Show. Charlie, just so much information. And,
unfortunately,
we have to scoot.
We do. I guess the car show is coming on any second now. So stay with us. Come back next week for more about
about trees of 40 fruit. And thank you, everybody. Great calls. Thanks, Carlos, Frank. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.